In this episode of Aside of Data, I interview Paul Schumacher about how businesses actually use process mining. I'm Anton Yeshenko and welcome to Aside of Data, a podcast about unconventional side of data science. Paul Schumacher is a PhD in computer science from University of Trier and Goethe University.
So my PhD is from the Goethe University, but I started at the University of Trier.
You focused at problems with using artificial intelligence to discover process, formal process models from textual description of processes.
So basically, the idea was, or the project was related in the area of experience reuse. So that was the research group I was working with, was working in the area of experience reuse. And the idea was to somehow reuse all this experience we have on the web, and especially this procedural knowledge, which is on the web. So if you look at something like a how-to, a how-to at the end is a natural language description of a process. So it describes you how, it describes how you get to a certain goal. And I worked on basically making this knowledge processable by other methods of artificial intelligence, mainly things like workflow retrieval or workflow adaptation.
Okay. And now you're already like for 4.5 years working at Celonis. So maybe we can start with, you can explain what was your basically journey to become a data scientist at the company, and not, for example, why didn't you go to be a professor after PhD?
I would say, I mean, everyone has to decide at the end, yes, of his PhD if you want to continue an academic career or an industrial career. And I think I was always a hands-on person. And let's say one of the real big issues I had during my time in research was actually getting access to data other than what is publicly available. So whenever you wanted to have data from a company, for example, also process descriptions of companies, it was very hard on getting them. And if you are in industry, it's not the problem. The lack of data is not a problem. It's, I would say, rather the other way around. So you have too much data and you need to figure out what is relevant. And so basically, and back then, Celonis looked like a very good fit for me personally.
Mm-hmm. And back then, Celonis, how large was it? Because I guess now they have like 300 people or something.
So back then, it depends a bit on how you count working students, but I would say something between 30 and 40 people have been working at Celonis. And today we are 750, 800, depending on so in that area. And I mean, it's a different, let's say if you have 30 people, then it's simply, you kind of do everything which just needs to be done. And you get also some kind of a jack of all trades because you do not have specialists to do the job. So basically when I joined, for example, we didn't have a dedicated HR department, or we didn't have a legal department, things which come when you grow, which is also necessary when you grow. And it was also way more unstructured. Back then we were working in the area of process optimization, but I would say a lot of things we did back then were not really process oriented, or processes didn't exist. And what I see now, or the journey we are doing currently, is basically getting things into processes. We are using Celonis now on our internal processes. For example, the first process for which we used Celonis internally was the talent acquisition process, simply because for us, we grow so fast, we need to get people on board. And I think one of the major advantage we have compared to big companies like BMW, which you have here in Munich, is really speed. And that was also for me one of the like also one thing. I mean, I got a response on my application very quickly. And that's like why we optimized our internal recruiting process in the way that we answer quickly so that we get that people yeah. join us before other companies even started a formal interview process, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what's your function? What do you do in Celonis?
So I'm basically in the department which, once a customer bought our software, I'm delivering the project. So I discuss with the customer what are their goals, what do they want to reach with Celonis. And then basically we set up the software, we extract the data, we model the event logs, which is, I mean, one major difference between how process mining is looked at in academia and how it is in real life is that in academia, you suppose you have an event log ready. And this is for most of the source systems with which you are dealing in reality is not the case, especially SAP. You don't have like this nice table where you have events which are linked to a case, but you basically need to gather this from different sources, and you need to join this in order to then have an event log which you can mine with a process mining algorithm. And basically, yeah, we develop those data models, and on top of those, we usually create an analysis, which is a kind of dashboard which then looks at different perspectives or different areas of the process depending on the customer needs.
Mm-hmm. And if you would define, or if you would tell to someone in very simple terms, what is process mining for you?
That's a good one. I would say in very simple words, it's connecting the dots and making a process visible and tangible for humans.
Mm-hmm. And a process of work. Like process of workflow, right?
I wouldn't restrict it to a process of workflow. I think mm-hmm. that not everything is really handled in a workflow. But I would really stay more general in saying the process.
Yeah, because I just want to transition to the topic that I want to ask next is, how do customers form requirements, and what are the usual requirements that the customer have? Like, because they could survive without process mining before and without Celonis, and now, like, how do you work with them to find those requirements for the analysis?
So it depends a bit on how much effort a customer put into, let's say, preparing a project. So some are very specific and know exactly on what they want to look at. Others just come to you and say, well, we have a purchase to pay process which we want to analyze. And then for something, so purchase to pay process is basically the process which you have in companies to purchase goods. And it's a process handled in SAP. And basically we have, for that we have standard models. But then again, you would discuss is really what the customer means by purchase to pay. Is that the same thing we mean by purchase to pay? So we need to align there. So usually we start with a workshop where we just discuss this. So discuss with them what is your notion of purchase to pay, which source systems are involved. So sometimes you have third-party systems in addition to SAP, which handle a certain part of the process, which you then also need to include into your model. And they really then, for them, it's often to get a first look at how is my process really looking at in reality, because they have no clue about this. They have certain ideas about certain, let's say, how long certain steps take, but really when they see for the first time, when they see for the first time, really the process we mine from their system, then it's like one of my favorite favorite moments, because you get then into a discussion. They say, well, this can't be, that cannot happen. This is not allowed. And then you can basically you go in, you filter for a single instance. They go into their source system, and and check, and then at some point they say, oh, this is indeed happening. And this is like when I work with customers, I always enjoy those moments because it's mm-hmm. it's when they realize actually what value they get out of it, when they discover things they didn't know before. But it's what is also important is to, I mean, this explorative phase is very enjoyable, but at the end you can, or the customer can get lost in it because it's just so much you can look at, it's so much data they can access now, which they couldn't access before. So it's also part of our job to steer them into a direction to really select a few focus topics which you would like to improve, so that you really get the most out of it. Because what we want to avoid is really that they let's say they do shallow analysis by their on their process, or they focus too much on those extreme cases mm-hmm. Which they discover because they are interesting, but they do not have a lot of value because if they only occur once in a couple of years, then there's no point optimizing those instances, but you would rather optimize those problems which occur in high frequency and where you can actually generate a lot of savings.
So because usually the companies have several processes running inside. So how do they choose at what process to concentrate? Do you look at what benefit you can get out of this one is, for example, 5 million euros per year about this process, then you try to, what is the measure of success for your clients?
I think the measure of success is always the return on investment. So they want to have in return what they invested. That's basically, I mean, we are working in an economical environment. So they also, the people, basically the stakeholders who sponsor the projects, they need to communicate why they did it. And usually you get this when you really show we generated that much savings, or we discovered a certain process patterns, and by optimizing those patterns, we could save that much money. Or it's not always money. Sometimes it's also just qualitative improvements. For example, if you are working with customer, if you are analyzing customer-facing processes, there's often also just qualitative improvements, which are a bit harder to quantify. But I mean, how we select. So usually we go in first with processes which are handled centrally, because there you have large volumes. And then what we see, if I look back now, I mean, I'm 4.5 years at Solone, so I also saw a lot of customers mature over time. And what a lot of them do, they start with like the big known processes, which is something like purchase to pay or order to cash in an SAP system. And then they generated value and they promoted internally, hey, we have a great tool here, we have a great approach. And then other people get interested, and then you start spreading out to different areas. And then often you end up also in, let's say, more exotic processes, which are not not that commonly known, but where you can also again apply very similar approaches than on the big ones.
So if you think about process mining tool like Solonis, it does several things, like process discovery, that is discovering the model of the process with some annotated process with, for example, frequency or like bottlenecks, etc. Or also there are parts like conformance checking or predictive, you say. So what are the parts of process mining that brings the most value to customers? Or what are the parts that are most requested or most challenging? Can you explore on that?
I would say that starting with process discovery to in this explorative phase, so there you really need this the discovery functionality. But usually what you would do, you would using discovery, you would identify a certain pattern, and then you would set up separate controls, let's say separate dashboards for those observations, which then basically allow the customer to dig deep, to correlate it with certain master data tables, with additional data they have, to basically find out what are the drivers for those for those patterns. I mean, those two work together, and they add value for the customer in a different phase of the project, but you need both. And they, and when it comes to conformance, then it again, it depends on the maturity of the customer. So those customers which are mature, they start using it. I think for a customer who basically starts using process mining, it's a challenge to directly go to conformance, because for a lot of them, it's already looking at the directly follows graphs. They need to at first get used to that, and work with that. And then the second step would be, okay, and now I actually compare it with a to-be process and basically do this analysis automatically. But that really depends on the customer.
What about some, like, what is the requested feature that is not there?
What is the requested feature which is not there? I mean, one thing I which was requested a lot, and which we also basically tackled now with our development, was, for example, the possibility to link different processes. I think that was like one of the features which customers requested for a long time, which was a challenge on a technology point of view. We are going to release a feature like that soon, because it enables you, to give you a simple example, a customer is using or is analyzing their order to cache process. If you look at this process on its own without looking at the surrounding processes, it might be that you have a delay in delivery. So you are delaying, or your delivery is delayed, but you want to find out why is this happening. And often what can occur is basically that, for example, you cannot purchase the necessary goods fast enough to produce whatever your product is and whatever you want to ship to the customer. And basically, if you look only at order to cash, you would not notice this causality or this correlation. And now by linking those two processes together, you actually can get a bigger picture on what is going on and actually find out that it's not in the order to cash area where you need to improve, but it's in the purchasing area where you actually need to improve to, at the end, improve your on-time delivery KPI.
Okay, so that will be then in the next release of Celonis?
It will be in one of the next releases, yes.
But what about this, for example, RPA, this robotic process automation? Do customers ask about that, or predictive features? Do they actually want to see what will happen later, next, or what about this?
So I think that when you look at predictive, yes, of course they want to do it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our customers ask for it, and we also implemented some use cases there. I think the big thing is you can do a lot with just postmortem analyzers. A lot of the things you need, you can already discover and you can already optimize. So you really need to have a good use case for predictive in order that it adds value, and it's also basically that the business case for such a project is good, because I mean it's predictive projects are always from an effort point of view higher than, let's say, a normal process mining project. And you really need to tailor your methods to a certain thing, and that's simply why you need to. And then also you need to have something where you actually can act. So not only, I mean, often it doesn't help that you know that something is going to happen if at the point where you know it you can do nothing. I mean, then at the end you have no value. You cannot. I mean, okay, you know things are going wrong, you know it a bit earlier, but if you cannot let's say, take actions to prevent it from happening, then the prediction is not of much value.
But do you have something in your mind, any actual example of like of requirement that requires this predictive stuff? Because it's just interesting if it actually needed.
You have certain use cases. Let's say, for example, in the area of payment blocks, where you simply highlight. So, I mean, there it's often simply a matter of prioritization on the person's side who is actually releasing those payments. So basically, if this person knows, okay, if I, so let's say this person has a task or an inbox with 10 payments they need to check, and if we can say, hey, if you need to check this payment because that's the one where you are running late or you are risking running late if you do not release it within the next 24 hours, then basically that's where you need to act. Okay. And that's also where you can basically then also alert people to basically proactively say to them, hey, check this specific case, release that, and then you can move on, or then you're basically this instance will be paid on time and the others are not that important in this moment.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about RPA? How would you comment on that, on this robotic process automation?
I think it can be useful in certain areas, but I think what they miss is the holistic view on the process. So I would say that they often try to optimize like one narrow task. And it can be that this narrow task now is better, or you improve on this narrow task, but might just be that actually doing this task is already the first mistake.
Okay. Okay. So basically you're optimizing the whole process while RPA tries to optimize the activities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back a little bit to the main topic and one more question. I think that process mining tool you can use for initial analysis, that's to show some problems, or for continuous monitoring. So can you, like, what is more useful in your view? What is bringing more value?
I would say you need to do the initial analysis to actually know what you want to monitor. Mm-hmm. So doing your initial analysis, you discover where are my problems, and then you monitor those problems and look at how they are improving. At the moment, I'm working a lot in this, in this S4 migration area, which I'm not sure how aware the academic world is on this issue, but basically what has happened is that SAP will stop supporting the legacy R3 system by 2025, and all customers basically need to move to S4 HANA, which is a new ERP system. Let's say for a lot of customers, this is really challenging. And there where we can basically support is also with monitoring is like one of the major things you have to do. You need to ensure that basically the business you are running, the scenarios which are possible on your legacy ERP are also possible on your new system. That's like the major goal. And a lot of customers combine this with also optimizing their processes because they say, I need to switch to a new system anyhow, so I can also basically use synergies and try to optimize my system, maybe go to closer to the SAP standard processes, reduce customization and so on. And basically we could say after once you migrated, you can check how is my process actually doing what I want him to do. So there you can really also use conformance checking that you have the 2B model in place, and then you check is it working as I intended it? And then you can have things like the system is not ideally configured. It can be that users need to have additional training, things like that. And by continuously monitoring your process and, let's say, the conformance of your process after go live, you discover those topics much faster and can then mm-hmm. take targeted action in order to remedy them.
That's a nice use case. I like it about the SAP, that it seems that it will be a huge problem. So a lot of...
It is. So there is one, just to give you an example, mm-hmm. There is one also what risk is related to that. There is, for example, one German company which basically lost 25% of its revenue the year after they moved to this new system because things went wrong.
Okay.
So to give you an idea why companies are so it's really for companies, they really see a lot of risk related to this activity therefore it's really a huge thing.
Yes, it sounds very good use case that kind of you prepare them to move because they must move. So you're checking if everything all right before you move and then you help them, right?
Yeah, for us, it's, I think we are there the ideal tool because, I mean, you look at your processes and, basically, we can support that the whole journey. You can start with doing a check actually before the project or just at the beginning of the project to look at how complex is actually my process landscape, what is my degree of standardization and so on, because from there you can then see how much time do I need, how many resources do I need to plan for and so on. So and then it really goes on that you basically, in the middle of the project, you need to develop the new, if you say, I want to optimize my processes during this migration, then you are developing your new process. And that's basically also, again, where you can use conformance checking to check how much if I use my new process, how much of my legacy system or from my legacy scenarios are covered by this process. And then also it's, you basically make the process tangible, and during those migration projects, we have a lot of workshops where a lot of consultants, people from SAP, process experts from the customer are in a room and they discuss. And if you do not have a data-driven approach, then a lot of what happens is simply subjective opinions. And with process mining, you basically can do a fact-based discussion and just speed up those parts.
Yeah, that sounds good. And maybe you have some like more success stories that are very like some specific, that what parts of analysis helped in some way, that maybe something interesting.
So really there it's that you really make visibility. I think that's really, I wouldn't say there is a single analysis which is, it's the combination which really is is there, which makes the success, because it starts with you producing this visibility, you allow them to see the real world, while before they heavily relied as I said on either its subjective opinions or few persons who know the process, or it's tons of documentation which is not really processable in a reasonable time because it's just so much different types of documentation, different teams mm-hmm. working on drafting those documents. And basically I would say it's really that they gain visibility on what they have. That's the big advantage.
Do you remember any examples that there was something like they were doing totally wrong in the process and then you were able to show it?
So one specific example would be, for example, that we had a customer who was basically merging two source systems, or they want to merge two SAP boxes into one. And basically there was like one, let's say there was a process variant which was flowing to this to this box where they really thought, well, first of all, when they did, so basically they thought, well, this is an issue for them, and we need to train users, and users will be affected by this. And what you don't want is basically that users are affected.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we did the analysis, we actually discovered that that this variant actually is only communicating, or basically that it's an automatic process, that there is an interface which is handling this. So when they knew this, then it was an easy way to switch.
Mm. Any other stories about some insights? Or for example, do you use a social network, like network analysis, about analyzing resources? Is there maybe some story about that?
Let's say what you can do is, if you, for example, if you are in the ITSM area where you look at service desk processes, a lot what is done is actually switching from a status-based perspective to a group-based perspective. So you don't look at how is a case switching between different statuses, but you look at how is a ticket assigned from one group to another. And basically that's where we use, let's say, resource, or where we look at resources, how incidents flow through resources.
Mm. Okay. And what about fail stories? Maybe you could share something that you don't need to do, because maybe you spend too much time doing that, and then at the end you discovered, okay, we just shouldn't do that.
I think there it's sometimes you were, so let's say you forget about the Pareto principle, and
okay,
you just work on things which get it to the last digit right. And at the end, if you go one step back and look at, okay, I spent now so much time on get it. So this can, for example, in when you're modeling the event log and you have, let's say for a few events, they are happening in a different time zone, and you spend a lot of time somehow getting rid of this incorrectness, or somehow getting it right. But then if you go one step back and look at, okay, how much time did we spend now on actually solving this, and how often does it occur, and what would be the impact of this incorrectness or of this fuzziness in your event log, then you realize it's basically wasn't necessary, because it does not, it might have an impact if you look at a single case, but if you look at the overall pattern you generate and the overall statement you make, then it doesn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you spend a lot of time to actually collect data and to make event logs out of it. What about GDPR? Because you are using the cloud technology to basically put your logs on the cloud, on your server. So, but what about protect the privacy of the data, protection, etc.? Because you still use the names of people inside of the logs. So what do you do about that?
That really depends on whether you are using them or not. So we have a lot of customers where we actually do not use names, where we simply do not extract users exactly for that reason. I mean, we are based in Germany, so we are very well aware of those issues, because I think there's no other country in the world which is that restrictive when it comes to data privacy than Germany. Therefore, it's something we are aware of, and we can also handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And also guide the customer to do the right thing.
Does it sometimes happen that you start a project and then cancel it because people don't want to share the data?
Usually you do not cancel a project. It can take longer. It can be that you have some legal discussions going on, that you need, let's say, sign NDAs, things like that, which can delay, or that you need to go through an additional security assessment to get clearance to access the data. But Yeah, usually what can happen is that the project is a bit delayed, but canceling, I'm not aware of any project which was at the end canceled due to that. You simply have some delays. You work with the customer to figure out on how to solve it, so if there were blockers.
And in your view, what is the most complicated in the pipeline of the project and process mining project? What's the most complicated thing for you in it? What's the most complex?
So I would say that let's say accessing the data or extracting the data. Once you have the data, then you can work, and then things go smoothly. But I would say really extracting the data is especially in the past, we are improving in that area also, mm-hmm. because we are developing our own technology, which we know and we can control. And in the past, that's like an area where you really depend on heavily on the customer's infrastructure, on whatever they provide. Sometimes this is also done by third-party providers. So you are not, it's something you don't have, you have control of, and therefore it's complicated. And I would say once you have the data, then you can work with it, and then you get, usually it's not that difficult, then you get your things done.
Mm-hmm. And if you spread into the time, what's the percentage of the time you need to spend on the data extraction, then analysis, and how much you need to spend in when you want to analyze continuously?
Let's say in our setup, I would say time for data extraction, it's, I would say, between 10 to 20%, but not, so this is if you would look at and from an effort point of view. Mm-hmm. Of course, there can be times where you just wait that something gets ready, and that can really range from a couple of days to a couple of weeks, depending on the customer and depending on the process on customer side. And then I would say we have like 30 to 40% getting the event log ready, and then the remaining is really analyzers and enabling the customer. And also there it depends a bit on whether it's a process we know or if it's something totally new. Of course, if you have something totally new, you need to learn, you need to learn what is the process I'm talking about, and what is relevant, what is the goal of this analysis. You need to figure out the data structure if it's a new source system. It's a custom setup where you don't know upfront how you spend or how you would share or how the share would be on this part until you have an event log which you can use.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And if you would talk to, if you would talk to academia, what would you wish them to concentrate their effort or focus their effort at?
What would I wish if I...
No, what do you wish to be developed further and from research point of view, not by technology?
So I think that when I look at what is done in research, then I think it's actually on the right track. So I mean the thing which always is simply that you need to get it into a state that you can actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the different conformance checking approaches you have, or the different just discovery algorithms you have, a lot of them, I mean, there is a lot of advanced stuff done in research, but it's simply not in a state that you can deploy it at a customer because it's too slow.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it's also about user experience. So we cannot have a customer wait for an hour for some discovery algorithm processing the data, but they expect a quick and interactive system. And that's why I think the challenge there is really basically get what is already there into a state that you can deploy it at a customer, and that it's in a way that, mm-hmm. you can, a normal person can use it. Let's put it like that.
Okay, yes. I mean, this you're talking about the algorithms behind it. What about the, for example, maybe visualizations you would wish to be like improved or like that? Because now we basically display the boxes and arrows. That's the process. Maybe you envision something improved in that way, like just visually improved.
I think the boxes and arrows are good mm-hmm. still, because people understand them. Well, it's something which you quickly understand. If you don't know it, it's something where you can get to a point that you understand what you are seeing once you used it for a while. And I think that's an important point. And I think a lot of the visualizations, they can be very useful if you know how to read them. Mm-hmm. But again, then you have this learning curve mm-hmm. actually to getting to that point. And I would say we would have a lot of customers who wouldn't reach it because they say that's too complicated for me and then stop instead of continuing to get to mm-hmm. that level.
Okay, so it's like in the airplane when you have this, all these controls, a lot of them. It's maybe useful, but it's not useful for a person who first gets into the...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a good analogy.
Okay. Maybe some wishes or recommendations for guys who do practically process mining. Apart from joining Celonis, of course.
I would say you always need to start from what does my customer actually want to reach with a project. I mean that's because that will provide you the direction. And once you know that, then you can also, I mean, this will affect everything you do afterwards. Once you understand what the customer wants to reach with process mining, then you know what you need to do. And the second thing would really be aware of the Pareto principle and do not get lost into trying to optimize single cases or extreme cases, because it will not have an impact on the final conclusion you will take from such an analysis.
Other question is, I guess process mining is very useful in Europe and especially in Western Europe, because you have SAP and all these companies that support SAP and record event data, etc. What about other countries? What about South America or US? Or like what is the state of the things there?
So we actually have customers in South America. We mm-hmm. even have a colleague working from Miami, because there the flight connections to South America are better than if you are within South America. But we have a couple of customers yeah. in that area which already are using Celonis. Mm-hmm. But that's I think that's a market which we also target. I mean, we target the whole world at the end. It's a very general technology which you can apply wherever you have processes and the necessary data. So I mean, it's.
And as the book of process mining says, the processes are everywhere. Yes.
Yeah. So. I think that's like the one drawback is if you work in that area, you start to see them everywhere, and you constantly think about how can I optimize things.
Yeah. Well, not the worst skill to have.
Depends on what you're doing.
Oh well, okay. Okay, I think I run out of questions. Thank you very much for joining me today.
And, yeah. Sure.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening for this episode of Aside of Data. To reach us out, go to Twitter @AsideOfData or send us an email, asideofdata@protonmail.com. Subscribe not to miss any of the future episodes. For example, next episode will be about conformance checking with Joseph Carmona.